and you're listening to The Digital Dialogue, a podcast dedicated to cultivating the excellences of dialogue in the digital age. This is episode 38, and today I'm joined by three guests who are actively involved in the innovative use of technology for teaching here at Penn State. Cole Campleys is the Director of Education Technology Services. Alan Gorky is the Assistant Director of Education Technology Services. And Sam Richards is Senior Lecturer in Sociology and Crime Law and Justice, and he is also the co-director of the Race Relations Project. So it's really a great pleasure to have all three of you here. You are in different kinds of ways responsible for my excitement about what's going on with teaching with technology at Penn State and with teaching in general here at Penn State. So I'm really excited to have you here.
Well, thanks for having me.
Yeah, thanks, Chris.
Yeah, absolutely.
So what I hope we could talk about today is how teaching with technology can be transformative, and I see this as related to the digital dialogue concept insofar as part of the idea in the podcast is to think about how dialogue can cultivate, or we can cultivate the excellences of dialogue in ways that make people see things differently and in ways that allow us to see ourselves to see things differently. So maybe, Sam, if you could talk a minute or two. I know you're a faculty fellow this summer. I was last summer, and I should publicly thank Cole and Alan for all the work you guys did over the last year with me.
Yep.
Absolutely.
You are responsible for the digital dialogue.
Yeah, and this podcast is all about me, obviously, right, because you guys are both my fellows.
That's right, exactly. Well, you know, if podcasting is involved, then Alan had to have some hand.
Alan's laying claim to the fellows.
I have my grubby fingerprints all over all the podcasts, yes.
Exactly. Well, and as I think I've said this also in public and in private, is, you know, the courage to do this and to hear my own voice and to think about the possibilities of what a podcast can do, I think there's some was really in large part due to what you, the courage you lent me, Alan, to do it and the idea.
And I fell in love with podcasting because Cole had his old I won't mention the name of it just in case they're floating out there someplace, but his old podcast.
Google still has them, yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I heard they're fantastic.
But there's a lineage. It's old school.
Right.
It's old
and
school.
I think that's part of the discussion today, right. Really should be that a lot of these ideas don't just spring up out of nowhere.
Right.
They have an evolution and a kind of a jumping.
Right.
You know, every once in a while they take a leap, but a lot of what we're doing now is based on what we've been working on. And some of these ideas go back to what you were doing back when you were the director of the IST Solutions Institute.
Yeah, and I think that one thing, and I'll let Sam answer the question, is this idea that, you know, all of this stuff does build upon the past. Right. And I think that that's what's really interesting about it. And what was once considered a highly disruptive way of communicating and participating with your students via, like, this idea that they have to subscribe and this audio flows to them and they listen. Ridiculous, but
right.
6-7 years ago, right, that we were talking about, well, podcasting is going to mean the death of lectures and the death of attendance and all these other things.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And we know that that has more to do with disengaged students and disengaged teachers than it does with
right.
podcasting or the introduction of technology. But now it's accepted and we're looking at best practices.
Right.
Right. And some of the things we're going to talk about at summer camp are around what are the new pedagogies embedded in these once disruptive, now accepted technologies.
Right.
So this is, it's really cool to see sort of like the building of people going from, I wouldn't touch that, that's crazy, to sitting down in front of microphones and pretending we're on a radio show, you know, once a week or whatever
do,
Alan, with ETS Talk. And it's pretty fundamentally interesting to see how all this stuff just sort of evolves and grows, but you have to sort of stick with it.
Right.
You can't dismiss it out of hand to begin with.
When I posted about this moving from engagement to cooperation and talking a little bit about that, I know both Sam and Alan, you guys commented. Thank you for the comments. But one of the points that you made, Alan, was that the summer faculty fellowship is your answer to getting the next level of engagement with faculty, moving from just, well, yeah, we're interested in what you're doing, to actually doing something.
Yeah.
So, I mean, so what are you doing, Sam, this summer?
Sorry.
I got back.
Yeah, sorry about that.
That was good. Well, you know, the first thing, we've kind of taken our entire enterprise and turned it on its head and decided that we would, in a certain sense, start over. And it seems like every time we go back to point A, things are different. So, you know, last week even, we thought, okay, we're ready to now get started. And then Alan had this brilliant idea of completely restructuring the way we do discussion groups. And so now we're back to point A and starting over. And what's really exciting, I think, about this work in the technology and new modes and forms and systems that are coming out, and I say systems because it's not just, you know, a new website or something. Right. It's really a completely different way of engaging. Uh-huh. And what is exciting is that things are changing so quickly and new ideas are coming up. So, you know, what I thought was really kind of cutting edge 5 months ago, now I find out that there are two or three other versions of that that are out there. And now I can choose from those and see which one really works the best for me.
And that's so, the pleasure and the curse of hanging out with these guys. I mean, you're out there in front in such a degree that it's on the one hand, the possibilities are huge. It can be, though, overwhelming if you feel like, oh.
Yeah, it can be. But I think it's, you know, it's if you try to tap into what it's like to be a 12-year-old, you know, kind of discovering the world or something, if you can stay in that mode, then it's just, it's really exciting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that is a fun place to be, honestly. Mm-hmm. Because, I mean, the reason that I love my job so much is because I'm constantly getting to learn, experiment, and mess something up and just talk to interesting people and have those moments where you just kind of butt heads and ask the interesting questions.
But, I mean, not everybody's like that, right? I mean, a lot. We talked about this early in the digital dialogue about openness and being your attitude isn't like that playful 12-year-old. It's, okay, I've done it this way, and now this is another level of things I've got to learn in order to do if I'm going to do it differently. And so one comes up against that attitude quite a bit, that change. It's like this new technology. My attitude is like, yeah, let's see what this can do. I'm ready to spend an hour playing around with it.
Yeah, but I think one of the things that's sort of important to start to think about is that it can't be about just the new technology, right? And what's happening now, you know, what's happening now? Well, you know, now March is forward with time. And I think what's really important for us to start to think about and start to understand is that there are affordances at the base level of all these different technologies. And what, at least Alan and I, our job is to not really learn the technology, but to learn sort of more of the broad brushstrokes of the potential to challenge existing pedagogy and existing practice.
Right.
And that's what keeps me engaged.
Yeah.
You know, I'm just like Sam and you, Chris and Alan. I love the latest iPhone and the iPad and whatever else they throw at us, but what's really interesting to me, where I get my kicks, is to start to think about, so how do I take this device and put it in the hands of students and faculty and see what happens?
Mm-hmm.
And so my job is really about making connections and turning on sparks and letting people think about stuff in different kinds of ways. So to me, the latest gadget is interesting in and of itself, but it really stops pretty quickly there, right? And the newest web service, I mean, Sam, you said system. And like I like to think about this as a system, in a systems approach or systematic thinking. Like all this stuff is connected. And underneath the surface, we have to start to get a little bit deeper beyond the, wow, that's a really neat service. Twitter's really interesting. Well, what does Twitter do in a classroom?
Mm-hmm.
What does it do to challenge practice? What does it do to really encourage discourse?
Right.
How do we think about those kinds of things? And that's why, like, the faculty fellowships are so important, because you guys are pushing us to think about our technology in ways that is much more applied as it relates to your problems of practice. And it allows us to come at you with different ways that we've seen other faculty do things.
Right.
And so when I hear the chatter in the halls from, like, Alan and the other faculty fellow teams, it's so energizing because I hear my staff using the language of your challenges. And that's a whole different dynamic for a group like, you know, a technology group.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Technology groups tend to, and this is a generalization, but retreat to sort of the common denominator, which is, wow, isn't this technology cool? Hey, Sam, you should try this because it's neat, right? Not because it's going to encourage new forms of discourse in your class. And I know from talking to you the first time, that's what you're really interested in.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you even came at me with, like, look, man, I'm really not all that into all the technology. I'm into getting my students to have really deep conversations. So that's where that's the level that the conversation that I want to have exists on.
Yeah, I mean, I totally agree with that, because if you throw a new social network widget or a new app or something, I'm going to learn that in a couple minutes, and that's not really as interesting. The conversation that Sam and I had last week was about using video conferencing to have students – I'm not giving anything away, Sam, am I?
No, go ahead.
Students in America, Jewish students in America, talking to Palestinian students. And video conferencing has been around a long time, so it's not like a whiz-bang technology, but that particular application of it is just so interesting because there's so many things to puzzle out, and how is that going to work, and what's going to happen there. We talked about moderation, and is this in the open?
But that's focusing on a problem of practice, right?
Yeah,
on,
yeah,
on
totally.
On a design issue, not on the technology is just this enabler
right.
to get him at this new higher order sort of opportunity.
So if we have infinite technologies and infinite problems, then I'm going to be
interested. So what drove that? What was the pedagogical concern that drove, that's driving you, Sam, on this project to go back to square one or point A again and rethink the way communication is going to, maybe you could talk a little bit about the world in conversation discussion.
Yeah. Well, I think to go back even further and thinking about the class, so it's a 720 student class, and we have these discussion groups, and it's kind of the, you know, a standard large class with multiple choice exams, but you know, all these other assignments that are really interesting. But the truth of the matter is, when you sit in the class, you know, about 80% of my energy is expended just trying to keep students engaged. Mm-hmm. Whether it's me, you know, trying to stick a YouTube video in the class every 12
right.
or 15 minutes,
right.
or me just running around the room, it's about trying to get students engaged. And knowing for the past many years that I don't have the energy to keep doing this for the next 20 years of my life. Like I'm going to slow down. But there are ways to make it happen. And the ways to make it happen would be to get the students to keep themselves engaged.
Right.
And so in many ways we started, tried out lots of new possibilities, you know, using the web. I mean, I've always been on the cutting edge of any kind of student-based organizational tool that's out there.
Mm-hmm.
I've been trying to use it to manage these students, and in part because I'm a Virgo, so I'm like really oriented toward being organized.
Uh-huh.
But what's happened is that as we've gone along and started to kind of peel back one layer of the onion, we say, okay, hang on. This just creates some other problems. We could look at what's underneath
mm-hmm.
this.
Right.
You know, I mean, if I'm going to get students just being quiet in the classroom, why don't I get them really thinking? And then if mm-hmm. I get them thinking, why don't we get them in dialogue?
Mm-hmm.
And if we get them in dialogue, wait, why just like two on two or
right.
groups of three or four? Why not get them in dialogue with the rest of the room
mm-hmm.
via the front screen? And well, why stop in the classroom? Suddenly, I keep peeling these
right.
layers. Why don't we get this happening at night and on the weekends? And why stop there? Bring their family and friends into
mm-hmm.
it. Let's just, and before you know it, we're on the World Wide Web.
Right.
And so what's going on is, you know, kind of slowly over the years, we've just been kind of kept peeling those layers back.
Mm-hmm.
And now we're, what's happened with Alan and the team is they've just kept throwing questions out.
Right.
That really were the critical questions and forced us to have to stop and say, wait a minute, we need to reevaluate everything and rebuild from the foundation up.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what we're doing. So the World in Conversation project is this simply a project that we have to get students in these small groups in conversation with one another
mm-hmm.
over, you know, usually 90 minutes. But we don't have to stop at Penn State, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, what happened was, a few years ago, Lori and I went to Israel and met some folks that were doing this having these conversations between Jews and Palestinians in Israel. I mean, there are lots of people that are engaging in dialogue,
right.
right? But they came here and wanted to see what we were doing as well, and we kind of went back and forth a few times, always trying to find some way to really make this happen. But we realized it's not cost-effective. I mean, we can't be flying people back and forth between Israel and the U.S., but we can Skype,
mm-hmm.
and we can talk. We can engage in video conferencing. And so we realized, wait, that it's all here.
Mm-hmm.
And why stop there? Like, we can direct our energies toward other places. So
mm-hmm.
that's how that really came about.
So you are going to integrate some kind of tool that will allow for video discussions in relation to the blog, or how is it going to work?
Well, that's another thing that kind of came up last week.
Uh-huh.
I mean, this is what's so amazing working with these folks, right?
Yeah.
It's because it's always everything is outside the box, you know, and really absolutely in relation to the blog. But, you know, we were talking last week about having a separate blog where these conversations Jews, Palestinians, people from all over the world could jump on the blog. We could record some of these conversations. We could put them up on the web. We could, mm-hmm. Other people could engage. They could see what's happening. Other people will want to get engaged. Mm-hmm. And we're realizing that, this chat relay.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I had that idea 5 years ago, and thinking, hey, wait, this would be really cool just to get any student who wanted to engage in a conversation somewhere. But I didn't follow it through to say, wait, why don't we do this on the web? If I had, I guess I wouldn't be here now. But so we can do our own version of that.
You'd be so proud of your creation, too, given what goes on ChatRelay,
exactly,
right?
Yeah, exactly.
I guess you could call those conversations.
Yeah. Well, I guess that does bring up the issue. I mean, okay, so ChatRelay, something like that, is completely open. It's completely, there's no... All right, I'll put it out. I mean, there's no pedagogical control or authority involved in that, and that's probably the power of it. It just is out there. Mm-hmm. It's the possibility of whatever. But what we're doing in educational institutions is not just opening up possibilities, although I think we need to do more of that, right? But there are goals. There are hopes. There are...
Yeah, but I think we are... In a lot of ways, what Sam is talking about with Alan is that this could become a platform that could be far more powerful than the technology used to support it.
Right.
Because what it does is it provides – I mean, this is open courseware at its finest in my estimation, right? Because these are models for other people to model conversations in their class, whether they happen in Kentucky or West Virginia or Virginia or Iowa or across the ocean. Right, mm-hmm. These are models for people to engage their students in commentary and conversation. And you're peeling the onion, and you're getting out here, Sam. But at the same time, it would be really smart for students locally at a lot of other institutions just to start with the basics of turning to the person sitting in the desk next to them, mm-hmm. and having very basic conversations.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's very rare, even on our campus, that a faculty member asks a student to look at their neighbor and say, "So, what do you think about this?" Mm-hmm. It's usually a very one-way sort of, and at the minimum, it's the student raising their hand and talking back to the instructor. What struck me about your work, even at the earliest stages when we started talking, was that your goal is to get them to talk to one another. And whether or not that one another is face-to-face in the classroom or across the ocean almost seems irrelevant until you start to think about what the affordances are to other people to see
mm-hmm,
that,
mm-hmm.
right? So you start to post these discussions and these outcomes, and people get inspired by that.
Yeah.
I mean, there are other faculty that would get would just literally become overwhelmed with this idea that, oh my God, I could actually do this, right? Mm-hmm. Because this is crazy sounding stuff.
But I mean, there's also a whole there are all these affordances, and I'm a big advocate, as you know, of trying to think outside of the box and trying to push the possibilities, and even trying to open things up in ways that are so surprises can happen.
Mm-hmm.
But there's also all of the concerns that one has about, well, how is that online conversation, even through face-to-face, whether it be through a Skype or a chat roulette kind of thing, different from the conversation you have with your colleague next to in your office, or both easier and maybe more difficult? I mean, we've all experienced the fact that somehow when you get online – students will say things mm-hmm. that they would never say to you face-to-face or would not say to each other face-to-face for positive and for negative.
Yeah, but I would argue that online is just another place. They say different things to you when you're at Zeno's and you see them out and they're having a beer late in the evening, right? They'll say that's a different context than the classroom, just like the online space. But I think that that's part of what's really important about this
mm-hmm.
is that increasingly, communications will happen via mediated technologies, right? Mediated environments. That, I mean, I was talking to Brad Kozlik today about the fact that this morning I had to go to the I had to leave my desk for a 10:30 meeting at the computer building. That really there was no news, right? So I got in my car, I drove over there, I parked, I went in there, I disrupted my work, I sat down, and literally went around the table, and everybody said, "Well, there are no updates."
Mm-hmm.
So I went back out, got in my car, and went back. Increasingly, we cannot afford to do our work this way,
mm-hmm.
right? I mean, we have a limited workforce; we're being asked to do more with less. The same issues that the students are going to face as they walk out of here. We need to, that's another underlying principle here is that we're not just preparing them to have conversations, but we're preparing them to have conversations in a modern sense.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, even that as a goal, and what I mean by a modern sense is taking advantage of the technology that exists there. So I don't know. I mean, I think the online place is just another place.
Yeah, I mean, I don't misunderstand the concern. It's not that I do agree that, you know, there are different places, different ways, face to face, add something different, and the, you know, podcasting. We've talked a lot about this in our different kinds of discussions. So I do wonder what drives you to say, okay, the adding the video component, what is that going to give you in this context of World in Conversation that just text responses won't give you, or just podcasts? Now, I know there are, and what will it take away? Maybe seeing the other person's face will close off possibilities.
Have you seen the FaceTime ads?
Yeah.
I mean, like this means something, like, right. You know, this face-to-face dialogue. And, I mean, we've tried to do podcasts with people just over audio, and have you ever done a phone interview?
Yes.
How difficult that is? Add the video component, and I think it does, it doesn't replicate this, but it gets a heck of a lot closer. And I think seeing that other person and seeing the differences, even if they're just slight physical differences, will lead to, I think, probably potentially better dialogue.
There's still, and something we talked about extensively last week was the phenomenon of having that piece of glass between you. So even though it may look, I mean, they're trying to get closer and closer to that telepresence.
Right, the real high definition.
Yeah, real high definition. Because, I mean, you've told me about this before, Cole, the difference between watching a sporting event on HD versus regular definition television, how much more engaged you feel. So we talked about some other options about maybe having this being an extensive, maybe a three-part series, having students use that blog space to post things like, here's a picture of my house, just to kind of contextualize before you even have the dialogue who this person is, where they're situated, what their living conditions are like. So there's some empathy there that you might actually get from being face-to-face in a room, but will help break down that piece of glass sitting between people.
Yeah.
So it's just fascinating stuff. I mean, I love talking about it.
Yeah, I think that's where I'm at with it. I know that there are limitations, but when else can I get one of my students to engage in a conversation, or how else could I do it with someone on the other side of the world who they think is a barbarian, let's say. And I think, oh, okay.
So how is that going to work? I mean, I think it's a great idea, but is there going to be mediation on the part of you, on the part of you and your team, of that conversation?
Yes, all of the all of these types of video based conversations will be mediated in some way. So we're just starting now. You know, we're doing stuff with the Commonwealth campuses, conversations based on U.S. race relations. Uh-huh. So we're trying to take our project, World in Conversation project, out into these other campuses. And we're going to play till we sort of get it right. We know it's possible. I mean, if it's possible, we can do it.
Right.
And I think that we can.
You know, I'm just thinking about the, I don't know how familiar you guys are, but the Kinber network, which is this new high-speed internet connectivity that will basically bring this entire state together and with super high bandwidth. I mean, imagine at the minimum you're going to be able to have real-time HD quality over the internet conversations with people, and it'd be a tremendous opportunity for us to connect some dots with that as that emerges as a project. That's a $100 million network that's going to be put into place over the next several years, built to connect research institutions with other institutions around the state. I mean, we have a lot of fiber. We can connect fast, but, you know, drive down the road to Bloomsburg University. They don't have those same kind of capabilities. The Kinber network will allow that to happen, which means that you could potentially draw those students into these conversations and really connect just at the first layer. Talk about onions. Mm-hmm. Peeling back, you were talking about the Commonwealth campuses. Take it at another level to the state system of higher education in Pennsylvania, which is a totally different type of student that we have here, right? And I doubt that they have the ability to have conversations like the ones you're modeling in your classroom.
Well, so they have the layers, ability.
With the ability. Whether they do it. Right. Whether somebody's leading them or taking them down those paths.
But one of the things that you said just now struck me, and this may be related to the next episode of the Digital Dialogue when I have you and Laurie on, but if anybody can do it, you can do it because you have all this experience with getting people in physical rooms to talk about really hard things.
Mm-hmm.
So it's, you know, I don't want to leave the impression that what the idea is, you know, we're just going to open up the possibility for people to have this, you know, right. conversation. It, right. it really is, it's got all this experience behind it.
Yeah, yes. I mean, really it has 20 years of experience
right.
and lots, hundreds upon hundreds of really brave souls who mm-hmm. decided that they could jump in and really kind of paved the way for how to do it. So all of our work and training facilitators and so on is based upon years and years of doing it and making mistakes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So it's but ironically, I mean, it's simple. You sit down and you have a face-to-face right. conversation with someone, but why don't we do that?
Yeah.
You know, why is it that to this day in, you know, mediation in the court system is rarely used, you know, still?
Mm-hmm.
Right. Gosh, because dialogue is used.
Well, it's hard.
It's difficult. And mm-hmm. it's simple and it's difficult. So, yeah. So we realize that technology isn't ever going to replace sitting down face to face with somebody. You know, like cyber sex is not the same as the real thing.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it never will be. Right. But you know, let's get as close as we can.
And it does open up. I mean, I can see the ways that it opens up a whole range of possibilities with regard to physical location, so that you can increase the diversity of your discussants much easier, more easily when you could have a pretty robust face-to-face discussion over the internet, where you know somebody sitting in State College is talking to somebody in Jerusalem.
Sure, we have mm-hmm. one of our facilitators from this past year is we're going to spend the next 2 years with Teach for America on the Navajo Reservation out in the Southwest in a high school. And I thought, okay, we'll be talking to your students somehow.
Right.
You know, why not? I mean, you know, let's get them in. Let's have some kind of conversation. Even, you know, in the 119 class,
yeah.
you know, mm-hmm. dial people in. I've always wanted to do that, and I haven't just because of the limitations and bandwidth.
I've done that a couple of times. You know, I was working with some people from the University of Missouri in the journalism school back, I don't know, this has been several years, but we would use iChat
mm-hmm.
for me to be able to come in and do guest lectures. You know, and it was always sort of freaky because I knew I was up on this, you know, leaning over my head.
Cool campus.
But there was a lot. I mean, and they did engage with me differently. And we would talk to the, you know, the other faculty on the other end, and he would always say, you know, I get a very different kinds of question and answer session going on when it's like this than when I bring the guest lecturers physically into the class.
Uh-huh.
They seem to be much more open and willing because, let's face it, it's much more difficult for me to really see out there
mm-hmm.
to them. You know, I think it probably builds a little bit of a different relationship.
Right.
But there's a lot that can go on there. You know, Sam, I was thinking about your Navajo example. We do ETS Talk, Alan and I do. And a couple of years ago, we had a teacher from, I think it was Massachusetts or New Hampshire, send us an email and say, I play ETS Talk for my students every week. This was like a seventh grade class
yeah,
or something.
Yeah.
So that's when we started cleaning up the language when we put the explicit tag on. But they had started a wiki about the things that we were talking about, and they were tracking technology trends, and they were using our podcast to really build his curriculum live. And then what ended up happening was they ended up sending us a collection of questions that they had mm-hmm. produced after going
yeah,
through
that
this
was,
whole
that
thing.
Was a good show.
And then we went through sort of rapid, and we tried to answer those questions. So even just being able to do that for like a high school or groups of kids
mm-hmm.
who don't have an opportunity and access, and that's something mm-hmm. else to really keep mm-hmm. in mind. This tears down the barrier of access to expertise and knowledge.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I think he was also trying to help them envision what a technology career is.
Absolutely. He wanted them to see themselves as technologists, not in like the, you know, the I fix your machine sort of a way, but the new image of what it means to be a knowledge worker, right?
Right.
And to be able to help people with ideas
yeah.
around technology. And so that was his way of being able, so he allowed them to hear our voices. And then what was so awesome is he actually picked up the phone and called me. You know, actually what happened, I was actually on a trip and I was sitting in the airport on iChat, and I got an iChat that popped up, and it was this student from the seventh grade class.
Wow.
He said, I want to introduce myself, my teacher, he sent you an email.
Mm-hmm.
We really, and it was just very organic, but really
yeah.
awesome.
Yeah.
Really an awesome experience. And so there are other things that can be put in place to support this. I mean, the idea of a mass collective wiki where people can generate new kinds of questions and submit them and provide with depth to the dialogue from mm-hmm. perspectives that mean, Penn State's a big place, but it's not the only place.
Mm-hmm. Well, one thing I want to throw out, and then I'll just, because this has been bugging me.
Then you'll just say discuss?
Yeah, then I'll say discuss. is the idea that this dialogue is happening in a situated sense.
Right.
Like the people who, say if it's a study abroad student, and I'm thinking about the geoblogging project, the study abroad student who is in the country that they're in and they're blogging from where they are and taking pictures of where they are,
mm-hmm.
still there before they come back and they forget everything and it disappears into that haze.
Yeah.
I mean, there's a difference between bringing people to a foreign place and having them talk to each other and having the students who grew up here and students who grew up in Palestine basically talking to each other, because they're situated. They can, like, you can see what's going on around them, that
sure.
it isn't all flying carpets and, you know, street vendors and, you know, our terrible stereotypes of what happens in the Middle East.
Mm-hmm.
Well, and I'll add that I think one of the, like, the geoblog,
mm-hmm.
Geoblog PSU.edu, what's so amazing about that is the way that its location is mashed up with content.
Yeah.
And it's like what you said, you know, it brings that situation or that reality to you. And there's something really powerful about the idea of taking content and context and putting a location on it. Like, there's something really intriguing about it. I mean, I spent last weekend, probably about 4 or 5 hours just tearing through students' blog posts about their study abroad experiences,
yeah.
and it made me long for a study abroad experience,
yeah.
you know?
Yeah. As I think about that even now, I think, wow, if I would have had that when I was studying abroad.
I mean, the photographs, and I mean, they're taking
even
pictures.
I have nothing.
I know.
Yeah,
I have nothing from college either. I mean,
yeah.
think about, like, the fact that they are literally experiencing the Colosseum for the first time,
yeah.
and they're taking pictures and they're writing about it while they're standing there.
Yeah.
And a lot of them are doing it on their mobile
yeah.
devices, and you can read the excitement in their voices, you know, and that you can almost see their minds opening up
yeah.
as they're writing. So, mm-hmm. yeah,
I mean, reflection in the field,
yeah, in the moment,
yeah.
But
in
I mean, that whole question practice. Of situatedness, embodiment, and what Cole, what you were saying earlier about how the conversation that is happening online. Be it with a Skype-like or a chat roulette kind of situation or whatever, is a place, and it has. I mean, we know from experiencing different social media sites, like Facebook has a culture.
Yeah,
and,
there's something about
and
that.
And Twitter has a culture, and so it's interesting to think about what's the nature of the embodiment that the World in Conversation is trying to cultivate. Is there an embodied? Even though it sounds strange to think about it,
mm-hmm.
but this it's a disembodied. Encounter in some way because it's a virtual one, or it's mediated by technology is probably a better way to say it. But it's also embodied in all sorts of what you're saying. To adding the video adds a dimension of the body, right? The
mm-hmm.
facial expressions, the color of skins, and all the other kinds of things, right? The background
mm-hmm.
in the room that they're talking from. So there's a whole lot of interesting new dimensions that kind of come out when you build this. Digital environment, this digital ecology, or whatever
mm-hmm.
we want to call it.
Yeah, it's a layered, very richly textured extension to what would typically be a very two-dimensional space.
Right. I'm loving this conversation right now, and can I tell you why? Because these are philosophical questions. These are sociology questions. These are technology questions.
Right.
They're design questions. I mean,
right.
they're...
But they all play... They all... really intertwine in ways that are
oh,
really
yeah,
exciting,
yeah.
and
yeah.
that's why having the summer fellowships are great for
yeah.
faculty, because we get to see the what's possible, but then we bring. I mean, even Sam, you were just talking about you know the souls of those who participated over the
mm-hmm.
years in these
mm-hmm.
discussions. I mean, you know, that's the kind of question I'm also interested in: is what are the there's a kind of optimism in your in your whole approach, Sam, and I think I have this kind of optimistic view, too, that sort of says, you know, things are possible. Students could do stuff. I could learn. You know, that seems to me to be different from a lot of what I sometimes get, which is this is a bunch of garbage. This is something extra to learn. Students aren't capable of it.
But the answer to that
yeah.
is yes. Right? The answer to that is this is a lot to learn. It is a lot. It's
yeah.
this is difficult, but it's worthy.
Well,
I mean, it's
you know,
worthwhile.
Yeah. I think back to when I used to read used to read exams and papers and so on, which I don't do anymore. I gave it up. And I actually fell in love with teaching when I stopped grading and just, you know, turned it all over to TAs and so on. But the past couple of years, I've been reading student blog entries. So this is 10 years. I haven't graded a paper in at least 10 years, maybe 12 years, I don't know. But the past couple of years, I've been reading blog entries and taking note of when they were written, and sometimes at 4 in the afternoon and sometimes at 4 in the morning.
Mm-hmm.
Right. I'm amazed at how articulate and insightful and thoughtful students are. The things that they say in the blog entries are nothing that I would expect coming out of the mouths or the off of the fingers of these people that are staring back at me in class, you know, when we're in that kind of mode.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And I think that students are so, you know, ready to think.
Mm-hmm.
And our entire project is really built around that idea that we're just trying to spark people's minds.
Right.
And so whether it's a face-to-face conversation with 10 people in a room, or it's a video conference or a podcast or whatever, the point of this entire enterprise we call higher education is to spark thinking.
Mm-hmm.
And so if we can make that happen, then we've really done our job.
I had an interesting point about that because I also wanted to play off of this idea of when you stop grading, you start loving teaching. I mean, really, I feel like after the faculty fellowship, and I came up with this idea to have a co-authored blog in my classroom, and students were dynamically really generating the content in the class, you know, under this kinds of guidelines that I set out. I all of a sudden, and I also got rid of the papers. So it was the rubric said, you've got to write substantively, consistently throughout the semester, and I will evaluate them, you know, 3 or 4 times during the semester. But I never had a stack of papers on my desk. I was reading them on my iPhone, in the line, grocery line. I was reading them on my computer when I had a few minutes. And I was so, as you're describing, so taken by the thoughtfulness, by the level of, I want to say more than engagement, because they were really had bought into this community that was going on. And reading, you would look, they describe looking forward to going to the blog to read. That's the way I felt.
Mm-hmm.
So it wasn't like when I had to go assess them, first of all, I knew who they were. So it wasn't like going through a stack of reading the same paper of, right, you know, whatever you assign.
Yeah, I mean, I teach every other year. I teach a grad class in education, and I can tell you during that spring semester, I stopped reading almost everything else online because all my students are writing, and they're not being told what to write or when to write by, but my RSS reader from that site is lit up every day, all day,
right,
from students participating. And like both of you have said, I mean, it's rich, engaged stuff. And I think, you know, I don't give tests. I don't do any of that kind of stuff, you know, because I gave that up years ago, too, when I was teaching freshmen in IST, and we started to use the blog, and I just started to realize that, my God, they have a lot more to say than we give them credit for. Why give them a box this big on an exam page to write an answer when they should just have a compose window to share what they want to share, and they can deep link and cross link and reference one another and do things. And it's made teaching so much more important to me because I know my students so much better. Now, I don't know if that can occur in your class, Sam. You have 720 of them. I'm sure that you get to know a handful. But
I'm looking at Alan and thinking, okay, I wonder if Alan's gears are whining here. Because, yeah, I'd like to get away from that. So maybe that'll be the next a couple weeks we'll...
But there are ways, and you know, we talked to Michael West when he was here, and I think one of the things that turned you on was this notion of calibrated peer review and getting the students to take more ownership. Mm-hmm. But I know your friend Michael Ovaski, you know, that we're working with on the comm class, is thinking really hard. He's got 300, you know, he's got a tiny class compared to yours, you know, but he's thinking about these same kinds of things. But what we're talking about here is really moving back towards getting at student participation, you know, instead of this idea where we send them to the testing center, they put their little card up on the wall, and they take their 50-item multiple-choice test, and they go away. We're talking about students who now can look back at their work. Talk about, you know, you don't have your pictures, you don't have anything from college. You know, these digital dialogues that you're creating are living on in this space. And as long as you feel like being the curator of that, these kids can come back in 10, 15 years and look at their work and reflect on what they did. And to me, that's the biggest crime of my educational career, is that I literally don't have anything to reflect upon.
Right.
I don't know what my writing looked like when I was 18. It's all gone, you know? It was never indexed and stored and searchable and put out there before.
Forever and ever.
Yeah, right. For people to see, you know. Right. The work I've done for the past 7 years is indexed and stored and managed someplace. So I think that there's a lot of interesting stuff going on with this, and it's really encouraging to hear that there are faculty. Because, Chris, to your point, there are also a lot who say, that's garbage. That's a waste of my time. Right. How can I do less?
Right.
That's the question. Right. That's the same. That's the equivalent of getting. What do I need to do to get an A?
Exactly.
Or what do I need to do to get a C? Is this going to be? That's the equivalent to that.
It's the same thing.
Right? For us, that's the equivalent of how can I do less?
Well, you know, but
And what I mean by that is then not replace it with something else more engaging.
But you know, most people teaching in college are not really teachers.
Absolutely. You
know, teachers are wanting. They're concerned about what's happening. And, you know, a lot of us get into these positions just because that's what pays the bills. And so so maybe, you know, it's not possible to really have these kinds of dialogues with everybody, you know, and try to really push it out there. Because some people really are just not going to be interested in listening.
Right. And I also think, I mean, and this goes to the larger sort of more philosophical concern about, are we teaching our graduate students, are we teaching our selves to have the virtues of learning in the way that, actually, Sam, your response to my post about cooperative education was right on. You faculty have to think of yourselves as a learner in this community, right? And I don't think, well, maybe this is unfair, but I think there are a lot of faculty who don't see themselves as learners. They see themselves as teachers in a one way, in a unidirectional
sense. Well, Ann Clements, in one of her early posts, she's one of our faculty fellows this year, she made a post saying that she's not as comfortable. This is a new situation for her because she's used to being the knower.
Right.
And now she's finding out how much she doesn't know. And I wrote back and I was saying, but what you don't understand is that you know A and I know B, and if we mash those up together, we come up with something completely new. So it's not like you're coming to us and we're going to teach you what you don't know. It's please give us an interesting problem or
well, we're not going to solve your problems, right? I mean, it's what we're trying to model. It's the cooperative kind of thing.
Right.
I mean,
it is cooperative in that sense.
Vast amounts of new ideas to us. And we just try to put up a, you know, like some sort of like reflecting board to try to kick them back at you with different kinds of tones associated with them. I mean, I've said it, and I don't know if you guys have heard me say it, but the faculty fellowship stuff is by far the most important professional development activity I do for my staff because they get to see themselves in lights that are so different than the way staff are typically viewed. And they get to participate with you guys on a level that is so foreign in higher education. I mean, the folks on staffs like mine are typically, you know, there's a class system, if you will, in higher ed, right? There's faculty and then there's staff. And all too often, we assume those roles and then we assume that they actually really exist until we really get together and just start talking. I mean, it's the same stuff you're trying to do to break down those walls. And it's made my staff remarkably better at their jobs because there's confidence. And you know,
and it's such a great opportunity to be creative and to, you know, explore things.
There are no consequences.
Yeah.
Right? It's not like if we don't do something great with you guys that, you know, all 150,000 students of the institution, all of our members of the institution now suddenly don't have electricity. Yeah. Or like their email goes down, right? Which is like the garbage we think about too in the IT side, right? Because we mess up, Angel goes down, people are upset.
Right.
Well, you know, part of it, in defense of the old school or the old guard, is it's a little bit daunting to learn something new. You know, just kind of whether it's learning the iPhone, or learning anything. I mean, it can be a bit daunting. Although it's surprisingly easy. You know, but you know when I started using Poll Everywhere, I didn't come up with that. It was a student in my class. I was I don't know, I was asking. I said, hey, you know, we're going to take a poll in the class and everyone's going to raise
your hand.
You're going to have three hands. I mean, it's something I just have done forever. And it's easy, it's quick, you know. But this kid came up after class. He said, hey, there's this thing that we can hook up in the classroom real easily. And I'll do it. I'll do the whole thing for you, you know, and let's make it happen.
Yeah,
it'll be really cool.
Right.
And I said, and I asked him what it was. And then I got on and I signed up and just took off on it. And before I know it, the next day, in the next class period, you know, we were using it. But it came from him.
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, all we have to do is really turn it over to students, and they'll take over. Yeah.
A friend of mine at University of British Columbia, Brian Lamb, who was the person that got me interested in sort of the Web 2.0 spaces, the read-write web, he had a post the other day that I thought was fantastic, and that was just essentially building in the opportunity for you to talk to your students about the kinds of technologies that they think will support their work the best. Because often we throw at them these things, right? And to your point,
they think will support their work.
That they believe that will support their work the
best,
right?
That's a nice
way
of saying.
So instead of us saying, "Oh, you have to use Delicious to do that," well, they already have things within their workflow. I mean, like in Michael's class, I mean, he was having them submit Word docs of test items that then, if he used them on the exam, they got extra credit. And just one kid in the class said, "You know what? I'm going to set up a Google Doc for everybody,"
right?
And added 300 people to it, and it completely transformed the way Michael did his work and the students did their work.
Mm-hmm.
Now it built problems and it built, you know, great outcomes at the same time. But it was a student,
right?
And you know, in a traditional way, he would have said, "No. I prefer Microsoft Word. Put it in the angel space and let it happen." But he let them sort of not dictate, but provide a solution.
Yeah.
And I think that's got to be where this is, because it is moving too quickly.
But that when they did that was transformative, because now it's a different kind of activity that I think is a lot more rich.
And they
there's
have
a lot
ownership.
More dialogue
ownership.
There.
They have ownership in a new way.
I mean, they hacked his class, right?
Right.
I mean, that's
right.
What happened. They
right.
hacked his class.
Right.
This student hacked your class. But you were very open to this hack. But in a lot of ways, you know, the exam's on Tuesday, right? You know, the syllabus says it's here.
Right. And it requires a whole, and this is what we're trying to talk a little bit about, I think, when we talk about hacking pedagogy. We're going to be talking about that a little bit on Wednesday, Nicole and I, and at Learning Design Summer Camp. We're excited about that. And the issue, from my perspective, is, you know, and especially now that I've moved into this associate dean level, I'm realizing that there are what I'm trying to do in my classroom. Now, all of a sudden, I'm trying to do with my staff.
Absolutely.
Now, I'm trying to do with a cohort of faculty.
Mm-hmm.
And when I hear the faculty, some faculty say, well, isn't that too much work? I hear the voice of a certain kind of student. And I'm thinking, where's the connection? They're
right.
going to complain about the student who says that.
Mm-hmm.
And yet, then that's what they're going to say
mm-hmm.
when you try. So how can you circumvent that rather than that be the brick wall that says, okay, that nothing's possible with this faculty member? Say, okay, well, you know, how can I get you to take ownership of what you're doing and do it in a different way? And I think there's got to be ways to use the skills we're learning in the classroom and learning about collaboration, cooperation, to translate it into staff, like you're doing, Cole, I know, with your staff.
It's to me, it's even a bigger challenge than coalescing a learning community, and that is coalescing a work environment.
Yeah.
And, you know, I've worked both in industry and in higher education. In industry, it seemed much easier because the rewards were richer.
Right.
They were more tangible, right? Mm-hmm. Like our rewards here, at least the way I feel, are much more around the idea that I get to take great satisfaction when I hear stories of people like you two doing really interesting things. Or seeing Alan win an award for his work based on the work that he's done with other
people. I won an award?
sorry, I wasn't supposed to announce that yet.
This will be in for 2 weeks. We've got a hold on.
So I think it's easy to motivate people in industry much more so than it is here. But I've had, and I'm just being as honest and transparent as I can be,
yeah.
It's been much more complex getting my staff to participate at the level that I expect my students to participate
right.
at. Now, I think that has all changed over the last 2 or 3 years. But the first couple of years I was in my position, it was very difficult to get them to stop asking things like, is this going to be on the exam? Whatever the equivalent of that
right.
is, right.
right?
You know, like,
right.
how many widgets do I need
right.
to produce today?
Right.
You know,
yeah.
this isn't Spacely Sprockets,
right.
you know, folks. This
yeah.
is, you know, this is a different enterprise here.
But the whole system, though, this whole staff review system, as you were telling me about this training session you went through, is still based on that.
Absolutely.
You know, industrial production.
We don't know how to think about things in a different light. I mean,
yeah.
we're still living in an industrialized educational system, and it's translated itself into into the way we deal with our employees even. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, we have free will and we have a free enterprise and a free market, and yet as employees within that free market and free enterprise, we've almost become very open to the idea that they're dictatorships. Mm-hmm. You know, mm-hmm. like there's the big right. boss man and he tells you what to do and you do it from 8 to 5 and that's that. There's very little questioning of authority in that space. Right. And it's really interesting to me, and we wonder why students don't want to be more engaged in class. Well, they've learned this
right.
behavior.
For sure. Well, and this brings in some ways...
For 16 years.
Right. The issue that I know... Sam, you sent a link to maybe Alan and me to this TED talk about leadership, mm-hmm. and I forget who it was, the guy. I did watch it, but the point of the TED talk was you really have to. It was all about marketing, so it was a little off putting in that sense. But it was about the best marketing is the marketing driven by the why question. Why
yeah,
are
yeah,
you
yeah.
doing
yeah.
this? Right. So I mean, in some ways, it is. It's not just the teaching. Question. It's also, and being a teacher is a kind of way of being a leader, right? It's about leading people in a way that is not dictatorial, not dominational, but is collaborative, cooperative in ways that gets people to feel empowered about participating in a robust way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think people who really love teaching are posing the why questions to themselves. You know, why do I teach? Well, if I'm teaching to keep my students in control, then that, I mean, you know, there's one answer to the question. But if I'm teaching to spark their minds, then I say, okay, what is the best way for me to
yeah,
do
that? Yeah, what are the
right.
strategies?
Right.
Right.
And that's what gives you the energy to peel the onion,
right.
I think. Because whenever you're talking about that, you kept saying, why not? Well, why can't we do this? Why am I doing this in the first place? What happens whenever you bring in the family and friends into the conversation?
Right. That's the exciting part.
And I think that that's the same thing that allows you to get a group of staff together, right? Is you constantly have to be in the self-reflective mode
mm-hmm.
of why is this important and how am I doing and
right.
and how are we doing and are we doing the right thing? And
right.
It just leads to much better decisions, you know, honestly,
okay.
because how many times do we just mumble through and say, well, I'm going to do it this way because I did it last year and the year before and the year before
mm-hmm.
the exact same way. I mean, you have to say, well, why am I doing this in the first place?
It's exhausting.
It is exhausting. and but on the other hand, and now maybe this will be the
exhausting
the way to conclude today, is it also leads to the kinds of things that that I saw on the trailer that you put up for Social 119 students saying, this changed my life. You know,
mm-hmm.
I was transformed by this class, by our relationships with one another. And really, in the end, that's the power of dialogue in all its form, digital and otherwise, is can we transform?
Right. And notice they don't say, I've been transformed by Sam Richards.
Right.
They say, I've been transformed by the class.
Right.
And that's an important distinction.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know?
Yeah.
So. But how important would it be if we could set goals that would have students be able to say that about more than
one class? Yeah.
I mean, you know, I went through my entire education and I may have had five teachers that really sparked that kind of,
mm-hmm.
but the ones who did made me the person I am,
right?
Right? But those were far and few. If you think about how many classes mm-hmm. you take just in college
mm-hmm.
and how few
yeah.
teachers can get you
right.
to even think.
But that's what I would expect given
right.
how we end up in higher education.
Right.
You know, we end up weak back into it. It's
yeah.
just something that we have to do in order
to research
do what
or
really
whatever.
Wanted.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly.
Yeah.
yeah.
So.
So, and I think, I mean, from my perspective, that's the exciting thing about the new uses of technology for teaching. It's not can we do bad old teaching with technology.
yeah.
You know, it's can we rethink the way we teach and the way we learn using these technologies, which have affordances that open up possibilities that were just unimposed.
And I'll add that we've gotten much better at it.
Yeah.
Because I know for a fact when I started here at the university in 1998, what was going on is we were just simply helping faculty take their overheads and put them into PowerPoint,
right?
Right? We were shoveling the same, no, there was zero change in practice. It was just learning the technologies, and I think that that's why you're seeing more people embrace this now. It's because it has gotten easier. We're much more familiar, right? I mean, we're all on Facebook.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, even my parents are sitting,
right.
posting pictures and commenting on stuff on Facebook. That didn't happen just a few years ago.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think as this stuff gains more popular adoption, we'll hear less of it's too hard to do because it's going to get easier.
Because people have already done it.
Yeah.
And I think people, if they do, if they see models and they think about how to do it in a different way, it becomes so much more fun to teach a class when all of these possible new ideas are exposed to you as a faculty member. I mean, I feel now I'm looking forward to the fall because I know I've got a set of things I want us to think about, but I also know that there's going to be a whole new range of ideas I'm going to be exposed to. And I realized that I got into this because I love learning. That's why I wanted to be a philosophy professor. I wanted to.
It wasn't
learn.
The money and the fame.
No, but you know that's a fringe benefit of the whole. Thank you all for coming on the Digital Dialogue. This
has been
great.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah,
wonderful.
The Digital Dialogue is produced under a Creative Commons non-commercial share-alike license. To download or subscribe to The Digital Dialogue, visit iTunes U at the Apple iTunes Store and search on Digital Dialogue. You will find it under the Pennsylvania State University area of the iTunes Store. You may also visit my website, The Long Road, at www.personal.psu.edu/CPL2. Or you can join us on Facebook by becoming a fan of The Digital Dialogue on our Facebook page. Just search Facebook for The Digital Dialogue. This has been The Digital Dialogue.